Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of I Don't Care with me, Kevin Stevenson. Appreciate you joining us as always. Can you believe it? I've been doing this almost 6 years now, and there's still people out there who are willing to watch me and listen to me. It's amazing. I don't know how that happens, but I'm grateful for it. So, and as always, I have to remind you, you can find me on marketscale.com. You can find me on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, the YouTube channel. It's you know, I'm everywhere and probably nowhere that you want me to be. So again, welcome to I Don't Care. Today's guest is Quentin Fisher. Quentin is the founder of Aiden Systems. Welcome, Quentin, to I Don't Care. Happy to have you.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Quentin, if you know, listeners and viewers, if you didn't notice, Quentin has a little bit of a strange accent. He's from Canada, but that's okay. We won't hold it against him. He's been in the States for a long time. But he is a hockey fan. And so while I'm a homer for my, you know, beloved Dallas Stars, you know, I already told him, I said, look, you know, hockey's like number three on the list of sports for me. Of course, you start with football because why not? You know, I'm in Texas. What's more important than football? Not many things. And then baseball, America's wonderful pastime that fortunately opening day has started and my beloved Rangers have started out 3-1. We're excited about that. Quentin lives in Cleveland with a baseball team up there.
Not really a football team, right?
Yeah. And they also have a little bit of football up there. So Quentin, I'll let you try to support. I'll give you 10 seconds to tell me why Cleveland sports are better than the Dallas, and then we'll get started.
Yeah. Well, I can say I'm not a very good hockey player because I still have all my teeth. Right.
So, right.
my dentist is amazed. I got all my teeth. Right. So yeah. But no, football and baseball are big in the Cleveland area, you know, Columbus, Ohio State. So we hear a lot of that. And hockey is definitely not very popular here. It's a fringe sport. But you go up to Buffalo or Detroit, and it's a different story there, of course, right?
Absolutely. Well, I got to admit, I really enjoy hockey. So, yeah. And it's one of the sports I like being there versus watching on TV. I'm sure you're the same, right?
No other sport like live hockey. I don't think you can beat it. Right. I did watch hockey at the Ohio State football stadium this past year though. And that was cold. Right.
I can't imagine.
Yeah. And we had the Columbus Blue Jackets against the Detroit Red Wings. So it was kind of like an Ohio Michigan thing, but
that's not cool. Really, right? That's really cool. Yeah. They've done that a couple of times. And I know in the Cotton Bowl in Dallas, the Stars have played there a couple of times. Haven't made it there, but heard the same thing. I mean, cold in Texas is like, you know, in the 50s. So I'm sure it was a challenge trying to keep the ice frozen. But
you can't see anything either. It's like the atmosphere. The atmosphere is wonderful.
Exactly. Okay, so enough about our sports loves. There we go. So tell me a little bit about you, and then tell me, you know, why you founded Aiden and kind of, you know, a little bit about the company.
Sure. So a bit about me, like, so I come from Canada, but now I'm a full-fledged American and family and three daughters. And so I'm all in here, right? So I'm a industrial engineer. So I approached healthcare from the operations side of the house. And I learned this thing called operations research, which was kind of coming up just when AI and machine learning was coming up in the 90s, right? So really developed a lot of interesting solutions outside of healthcare, supply chain, did a lot of work with the U.S. Army, some really fascinating things. And then just fell in love with this thing called big data. And what are you going to do with this big data? Well, of course, you're going to use machine learning and AI. And then the interesting thing was that this thing called the cloud came along. And I used to be with these big, you know, consulting companies, and they would sell $5 million of big iron to deal with your big data. And then all of a sudden, boom, you could spin it up in the cloud for $5,000 or maybe even $500, right? And it was just a game changer. And I just fell in love with it and then decided to really get out there and try and democratize access to AI, right? And then founded Aiden as a result of that. So it's been very interesting, but always approached it in a healthcare perspective. Mostly, we've dipped our toe in some clinical stuff, but mostly operations and really trying to improve, you know, the operational posture of, if we can do it for the U.S. Army, we can do it to healthcare. That was my.
Absolutely. Well, okay, Quentin, I got to be honest with you. Here's the extent of my AI, okay? ChatGPT, I was telling one of my colleagues today, I don't write recommendation letters anymore. I plug in a resume, say, hey, write a one-page recommendation for this person for this job. It's been a game changer for me. I've written a couple of short speeches and presentations through it. That's it. I feel like I'm just barely touching the surface. And you're talking about all these terms that I got to be honest with you, I have no clue what you're talking about. So then I'm guessing a lot of people, you know, I'm sure I talked to a lot of the same people in my audience who are just like me. Talk to my folks like they're all me and idiots. And let's talk about AI and what you've done. You were talking about the bottom and the top were different, but the middle is the same.
Yeah.
Explain this to me because I'm lost.
Yeah, sure. I think what we found quite interesting is to jump to the end, we've been doing this kind of AI fit assessment for companies, and we're doing it with AI as an AI assisted fit assessment. So it's pretty cool, right? AI to help you figure out how to use AI. But when we do it, we have to kind of bring people up the curve to your point. And one thing I found that was quite interesting is a little history on AI, right? And that was kind of quite interesting for a lot of folks. So I'll just go through that real quick. So in 1956, that's when this thing started. They termed this thing called artificial intelligence. It was kind of a bad name, but it stuck, right? Then in the 70s and 80s, they came up with a thing called expert systems. And all this was a bunch of rules, right? A bunch of rules. And what happened was the kind of weight, the weight of these rules basically collapsed the kind of system because they started conflicting one another and all this, it just didn't work, right? So then in the 90s, when I kind of started to learn more about this, then they started to build the rules with data. That's called machine learning. So that's when that's when all the industrial applications really started to kind of get into machine learning. Now, data science wasn't even a thing then, but that optimization, operations research, all that stuff, right? Then what happened is compute got better. And then there's this thing called neural nets, which is artificial neural net. That was just a little, you know, very simplified view of what goes on up here, right? And that wasn't very good. And then they started putting a bunch of layers in it, like many layers. They call that deep learning for everybody, right? So that's okay. And that's when all of a sudden this thing called AlphaGo beat the Go champion. And it got really kind of interesting. And then from there, they started building out this thing called, then they started training on large amounts of data. And then Google had a big innovation, right? And with that, all of a sudden, things really started to explode. And that's when you had Google's BART and then ChatGPT 2.0, right? That's before anybody knew about it, right? So that things got really good. That was the start of these foundation models and these large language models, right? And then I think it was November 30th, 2022. That's when ChatGPT.
Yeah. And like I said, I've used that a little bit, you know, the rudimentary examples I gave you, even plug in some things like, hey, we're going on a trip. Tell me, you know, I'm using like the kindergarten level of this, you know, and now at my hospital here in Central Texas, we just on both of our MRIs, we've added AI packages, and that has greatly increased the efficiency. Cut scan times by more than a half. The images are so much better, but that's kind of the extent of where we are in my system right now.
Sure, sure.
So that's why I want to hear so much more. You know, how can we continue to use this? Yeah.
So when ChatGPT came out, I think it was very interesting because in 5 days it hit 1 million users.
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy. It just blew up, right? And that, and that's the hype that you're hearing. Just to kind of give context, that's the hype that you're hearing. Now, when you're talking about, so all the hype, I believe, is really around LLMs, large language models, right? And the, and these are things that are built on, you know, tons and tons of data with billions and billions of these parameters. So they'd be these big foundation models, right? But really quite interesting. And they're really kind of the thing that has changed things. So what it's done really is allowed people to, you know, not this machine learning, but now these large language models allow people to move for the first time ever, take text and have that as information. Because if you think about it, 3 years ago, humans had to read all that stuff, right? Now the computers can read all that stuff and they can do things with it. So that's this big bow wave of opportunity we're seeing and productivity. So what we're seeing is a huge push into the productivity area, because now you can have these machines read text, right? And process through text in a meaningful manner. That's the novel kind of capability that we're all just wrapping our heads around and how to do that, right?
Okay. And I'll tell you, I'm seeing that because, yeah, I still use Yahoo email for my personal stuff. And now on my emails, it gives me an AI summary at the top. This email says blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And so I've noticed that really over the last couple of months. I think they just implemented that.
Yeah. So the first kind of set of use cases is chat. And that's what everybody got all excited about, right? And then what you're seeing is folks are starting, of course, now take that chat capability and blend it into products like your email, right? So they're incorporating. So now this SaaS, software as a service, they're all incorporating AI into it to make it a better SaaS, right? An AI powered SaaS, right? So you're seeing that in all these technologies, right? I'm kind of baking that in. But what we're seeing is it's kind of, if you look at it for organizations, right? I look at it as three levels. There's like the baseline is chat. And then there's these things, you know, these AI powered processes, right? And I guess SaaS is really trying to do something like that inside of their stack, right? But organizations are doing it too. And then the next level are these agents, right? And that's when it's really about, you know, you're not just defining a process, but you're kind of, you know, letting it run and let it drive and produce some outputs at the end of it, right? So it's kind of like a stepping stone to do that. Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of the capability. But I think the big lesson learned, I think, over the kind of past few years is like all this new stuff, guess what? It's all really powered on your data, right? Because if you don't use your data, might as well just be using ChatGPT. Yeah, because really about your data and how you take your data and incorporate it into it. All these SaaS applications that are baking it in, guess what? They got the data right in there. So it's easy for them to do that, right? But what we're seeing as well is organizations, they have data in a bunch of different spots, different stacks, right? So how do you use AI across that? So we came up with this approach called an AI control tower. And the first step is to build something called a data lake. Right. So you pull the data in from all your organizations. So that's a term that's been around a bit, right? Big data, right? That starts with this data, like get all your data in there. And then on top of that, that's where you use all these great new models, you know? Yeah. So on top of your data from multiple sources, right? Could be your EHR, your finance system, your recruiting system, whatever, right? You kind of put it all together, and then you could chat on top of your data. You know, that's good, but it's better if you could have a process, because the reason organizations have processes, right? So why wouldn't you use a process instead of me trying to chat and reproduce that, right? So just have that process hit these large language models or these other models on top of your data. You schedule them to run in the background. They give you these insights. That's where we're going. That's where these agents are going, right? So think of data, models, and processes/agents.
Okay, so Quentin, tell me about your typical healthcare client. Just give me an example. Maybe not a name, but just a type of a healthcare client.
Yeah, so we have done a lot with a lot of community health centers, large community health centers, and we found that you know, they're nimble enough. They're not huge, massive systems where they want to do it all themselves. They're okay to hand it over. And a lot of times we'll actually take over their all of their analytics for them. And in a way, it's kind of better, faster, cheaper, because we can give them, instead of all these reports, we're like, don't build a report, just ask the agent, ask the AI. And we found that it's quite useful in a lot of cases, because anybody that has a big reporting system, there's like hundreds of reports, all the, you know, low volume, high variety reports. Well, wouldn't it be nice if you just type in the question and get the answer? And then the high volume stuff, you get a report for that, right? Yeah, so that's a great scenario of how we can just simplify it for folks.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you obviously work on the analytics side. What about, you know, how are you integrating AI into diagnostics? I mean, are you guys to that level yet? Because we're looking at some things where, kind of like you said, we're looking at multiple data sets, you know, whether it be from our, you know, our various EMRs and our physician EMRs and everything that we can pull in. And, you know, we're finding our patients obviously have a lot of different tests. And so why can't you aggregate all those tests and then see, number one, how they've progressed in their disease process over a period of time, and then maybe taking disparate reports, putting them together and saying, okay, hey, here's a diagnosis. I mean, are you guys doing that as well?
Sure. Yeah. And I think it's important that folks don't confuse these large language models, right, with what you just said, right? Because what you just said is, when you're doing diagnostic level stuff, you really want to be dealing with quantitative data, right? Data that's very clean, typically very structured. So we've done some analysis a lot in the behavioral health space where we've actually predicted when certain patients will kind of fail a urine drug screen, right? And there's actually signals, and we found like, I think about 5% of them would pick a time frame out about, we call it accessions, you know, basic tests, about 8 accessions, 8 weeks out, said, what's the probability? We found 5% that would be about 50% chance of failing that drug screen. We found another 5% that would be about a 20% chance. And then the 90 or 92% were like a 2% chance, right? So but it was quite interesting, because like, well, that's a very interesting risk profile that you can start to think. And the reason we did it was 8 weeks out was so that the doctors could have some type of lens on that and try to, so those types of things. But you have a lot of IRBs and a lot of kind of process around that, but absolutely. And also moving towards more value-based care, right? There's a lot of interest in that area as well, but that's different than these large language productivity models. Now you can take some of the text with these large language models and actually convert that into structured data. So we're seeing that. So you're using the LLMs, the large language models, to kind of take this messy data and kind of build some structure. And then on that structure, you then build other models. So it's almost like you kind of get the baseline done, and then you get to ask a better question, right? What's the next better question? Right. So, oh, okay, I got the easy stuff. Now what's the next better question? So I think these large language models can answer maybe the first easy question, but then the next question or the one after that requires some of these more nuanced, almost like classic machine learning. That's why you need kind of both the machine learning that we started way back in the 90s and the new stuff together. And that's kind of how you build up your capability.
Very good. Okay. So as you're building all of this and working in analytics and looking at the diagnostic space and all that, what's next? I mean, what do you see, you know, what do you see 5-10 years down the road in AI?
Two to three years, I think, even just, just instead of these reports, getting these kind of insights and recommendations pushed, right? So back to these mountains of reports we talked about, you know, nobody looks at them, all that stuff, right? You build these reports, they just sit there idle. I think having these dashboards for folks, right, and everybody having a role and really understanding you can only do three things. Someone tells you to do a bunch of stuff, maybe no more than three you can keep. So just what are the three most important things that you should be doing, right? And guess what? Based on the objectives and your criteria, it's pretty easy to identify what those top three things are. And maybe if the CEO changes priorities, parameters, they may shift a bit. But I think these tools to help folks kind of get stuff done, prioritize the most important things, the urgent things to kind of get those things done is very important. And then I think there's that, but I think a lot of the drudgery, right, what you're going to see back to the productivity play with all these LLMs and these things called agents, right? When we typically put these systems in, right, the first step is it's kind of like an opt-in, right? You kind of see it and you're like, okay, that makes sense. I'm going to use that, right? And then you kind of work out some bugs, the data's typically it's the data, right? You fix the data, you know, and then it's like, oh, okay, this is pretty good. It's kind of annoying to hit opt-in all the time. I'm going to move to an opt-out, right? So then you graduate to an opt-out, right? And then you kind of start working through that. And then you realize that after a while, it works pretty good and nobody opts out. It just runs. Then you kind of graduate it to the automation. So I think there's going to be more and more processes that do that. I think these systems, like you mentioned, like with the email and all these EHRs will start to bake a lot of AI into it. So it'll get integrated into a lot of the systems and hopefully just take a lot of the pain and suffering away, you know, all the clicks and all that stuff, you know. So I think that the SaaS companies, the system companies will make the experience a lot better. And for folks like us, hopefully we'll give people this broader view across the organization and give them the insights across the organization, like with this data lake. And so that's where I see it going.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, Ian, another thing that you hear a lot about in regards to AI is the ethical nature of AI and how to use it, you know, wisely and ethically. Talk a little bit about what your company's philosophy is on that. Some of the issues that you see and that you're trying to prevent.
Sure. Well, I think it depends a lot on the use case. So as an example, we did some things where we're working to try and predict suicide. You want to throw everything in the kitchen sink at that thing. You're trying to figure out a hard problem, right? You're throwing it all in, right? Just to really try to understand what's going on, right? And then we had another project, same client, where we're predicting no-shows. And what do you do scheduling-wise? Well, that's a different use case. Now you probably want to be mindful of protected classes, not putting those in there. So that's a great example of depending on the use case, you have to choose what data is appropriate, right? And then, of course, knowing that all these solutions are very probabilistic, they're not deterministic. So you have to do testing and you have to put controls around them and things like that. And it's not just a model. It's actually a whole system. And it's not just about deploying that solution. I think one thing that people don't quite understand as well is when you build something, it actually will erode if you don't maintain it. Because this thing called data, data's moving around, right? It's not like coding the system and it is what it is. It doesn't change. You build it tool on data, but the data is moving, the, you know, world's changing around it. So you have to retrain, you have to retest, you have to have a lot of processes and parameters in place to make sure that it's current, and not just current, but it gets better, because people will think about things. Oh, what about this? Oh, what about this? And it should get better, right? It should improve, right? And that's a different kind of perspective. There's a lot of controls in place right now with responsible AI, and it's very important to incorporate a lot of those, measuring the bias that people talk about. But once again, you have to understand the data and the use case very specifically. And then just there's a ton of filters, and with LLMs, just making people realize it is probabilistic. It's not, you're not going to get the same answer every time, and how do you guardrails in, and how do you, you know, put block lists? And there's a bunch of techniques. There's a term called red teaming, So when you build one of these solutions, you red team it. Basically, you got your the folks that are testing it for kind of positive experiences of getting the right thing. But then you have your kind of negative testing against it too. You try and hack it, almost like these hacks. You got to try and break it, right? And you have to do that, right? And so you have to kind of put all these things in place. And another thing too, I think that's very important back to, you know, this kind of control tower and a stack, and it's just not a simple thing, is that with it being probabilistic, you need to have a robust testing harness for these solutions, because you may need to test it. Now, if you test it once and it gives you the right answer, you can't stop there. You have to test it 100 times, right? And get, you know, and get the percentages, right? And understand where the weak points are. And really build that capability into your solutions. And then so you can have the measurements and all these things. I mean, it gets pretty interesting because you will actually have LLMs measuring, models measuring the performance of the models to give you results. So,
yeah. Well, you mentioned something that I wanted to bring up, and you were talking about bias. And yeah, whenever I was playing around with ChatGPT, I'm going in there and, you know, found a fair amount of bias, you know, and I'm guessing it's, you know, whatever the data says in there, but, you know, trying to manipulate it and trying to intentionally gear it towards, you know, one solution set. And it was obvious that it was not going to go there. I got some messages. I'm sorry that, you know, I'm not able to create that solution because of you standard. I don't know what it was, but I, you know, like you said, I was playing red team and didn't know it. I was trying to break it.
Yeah. And there's a term called jailbreaking, right? You can try and jailbreak these things. And back in the old days, if you would say the same thing 100 times and throw it out there, it would kind of like come back at you. Right. So, and of course they're more sophisticated now, and there's more and more sophistication, even at the chip level, where they're developing certain kind of capabilities and alerts on some of this stuff as well. Yeah, so it's getting quite sophisticated, and from a whole cybersecurity perspective, it's a whole other area, right? Because these things are just ramping that the threat vector way up on that, right? You know, so that, yeah.
Well, okay, Quentin, in the last couple of minutes, any last comments that you want to make? And this is the time you plug your company, so I'm giving you a little heads up there.
Well, I think the thing is, like, the thing with AI, folks, just the point is, there's a lot to learn, but just to get in there and to start doing it, right? And one of the reasons we came up with this AI fit assessment is because we found that people just didn't know where to start. So what we did is we came up with this AI assisted AI fit assessment to kind of step you guys through and actually understand, like, what are the kind of, you know, the objectives of your kind of organization, the kind of core objectives, what are some of the key pains? So this is very management consulting like, but that's where it starts, right? If there's no juice in the squeeze, don't go there, right? So the point is, we help you identify what some of those high value, but then kind of low effort areas are to get going and to kind of get some experience and really start kind of your journey with AI. This is a journey, right? I mean, it's here, it's coming, it's coming fast. So just encourage everybody to just jump in, you know, get into all the tools, and then this, we kind of came up with this, once again, this fit assessment to help people assess, hey, this is where I probably need to start researching, spending some time.
Very cool. Okay. Well, your website is aidenhealth.com. Make it easy. Thank you for that. So, Quentin, thanks so much. Yeah, this is an area that I'm trying to learn a lot more in. It's fascinating to me. You know, anything that can save me time, I'm all about. And we're already, as I said, we're already seeing that with our MRIs, and we're looking at some other areas that we're going to take advantage of. So thanks for being on the show today. Really appreciate it. Look forward to possibly having you back on at a later date for sure.
Absolutely.
And because, you know, obviously AI, as you said, keeps changing. And every time you ask it a question, you might get a different answer. So next time when I ask you these same questions, I expect a different answer, right?
That's going to be a better answer. That's right.
It'll be a better answer. Hey, Quentin Fisher, founder of Aiden Systems. Thanks for being on I Don't Care with me today. It's been a lot of fun, and look forward to talking again very soon.
Thanks. It's fantastic. Absolutely. Bye-bye.